Hello, this is Sharon with the Pantograph, dated Wednesday, September 19th, 2018. It's a pleasure to read with you today. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article entitled Changes to Traffic Eyed on Fairway. City sends postal officials suggestions. Fearing a return to what one member called a traffic nightmare if the Empire Street Post Office reopens, the Bloomington Transportation Commission voted Tuesday to send a list of traffic control suggestions to the U.S. Postal Service. The Post Office transferred that facility's customer service functions in 1999 to the Eagle Station, a former grocery store on Towanda Avenue, but now it plans to move them back to the building at 1511 East Empire Street, which is just west of Eastland Mall, at the corner of Fairway Drive and a frontage road that parallels Empire by August 2019. I see no way that we can go back to the frontage road fairway configuration again, Commission member Maureen Bradley said. That didn't work then, and it's not going to work now. Traffic on Fairway, which has a stoplight at Empire, frequently blocks the frontage road, and an island also prevents traffic from turning left from the frontage road onto Fairway. So there would be such a backup on the frontage road with people unable to get out of the post office, she said. Bradley and the other traffic commissioners voted unanimously to approve sending a letter drafted by city traffic engineer Phil Allen. The recommendations include converting the frontage road into a cul-de-sac in front of the postal facility so that it no longer would connect to Fairway. That creates another spot that gets the mail drop-off boxes out of the parking lot in front of the postal facility, which also is a safety concern, said Allen. Cutting off the frontage road from Fairway also would allow the city to improve the fairway at the Empire intersection by removing the raised median and adding turn lanes on Fairway and modifying the traffic signals, Allen wrote. Many of the residents who attended a July 31st public meeting hosted by the U.S. Postal Service raised similar traffic concerns. The agency said $2.2 million has been allocated for the relocation project and that the facility's 320,000 square feet of land on Empire Street can accommodate redesign plans. The relocation would save money and improve efficiency, and postal officials at the July 31st meeting said they would take access concerns into consideration. The city staff also recommends the Postal Service provide a traffic impact study. In other action, the commission is looking for ways to deal with speeding on residential streets. Commission Chairman Michael Gorman said he supports a blanket lowering of the speed limit from 30 miles per hour to 25 miles per hour in residential neighborhoods citywide. At the commission's meeting October 16th, Allen plans to bring research requested by the commission, including potential costs, to change out the signs and any enforcement issues and what processes other municipalities have used to lower their speed limits. Assistant City Attorney George Boyle said the State Motor Vehicle Code allows municipalities to set speed limits on streets within their boundaries as long as they are not under some other jurisdiction. The Illinois Department of Transportation, for example, oversees U.S. and state routes in the city, such as U.S. 51, U.S. 150, and Illinois 9. To change the speed limit, the city council would have to approve an ordinance with the change. Scout spirit runs deep in Bloomington family. local youth becomes eighth Eagle Scout in two generations. Less than 4% of Boy Scouts will become Eagle Scouts, but for one Bloomington family, it's a tradition. Seth Peterson, 15, became the 101st Eagle Scout for Troop 20, which is based at St. Mary's Church, over the weekend. He also became the eighth member of the Peterson family over two generations to achieve such status. This was a lot of hard work and dedication, the Central Catholic High School sophomore told the Pantograph, adding that having the family tradition helped keep him motivated. I wanted to do it for myself, but also for my family, he said. Seth Peterson's achievement meant something to the entire Peterson family, his father Tom, also an Eagle Scout. Since 1929, when the W.D. Boys Council was formed, there has only been one family to have as many Eagle Scouts, but it took them three generations, Tom Peterson said. Having that many Eagle Scouts in one family is rare. To reach the highest rank in the Boy Scouts, a scout must go through a lengthy review process, and the requirements, which include earning at least 21 merit badges, can take years to fulfill. The process must be completed by the scout's 18th birthday. An Eagle Scout must demonstrate scout spirit, an ideal attitude based upon the Boy Scouts' oath and law, service, and leadership. This includes an extensive service project that the scout plans, organizes, leads, and manages. Tom Peterson was a 16-year-old sophomore at Central Catholic High School in Bloomington when he earned the Eagle Scout rank in March 1985. His brothers, who became Eagle Scouts, were Stephen, 15, in April 1978, and Dean, 15, and Damon, 14, both in February 1974. Three of Tom Peterson's nephews became Eagle Scouts in Peoria. Seven of the eight Peterson Eagle Scouts attended Seth Peterson's ceremony Saturday. One was in California and unable to make the trip. Scouting is very important to our family, Tom Peterson said. Our dad, Arthur, started us off. He joined in 1967 when the troop started. We just always enjoyed the camping and the activities. We understand that being an Eagle Scout is rare. Even for members of the Boy Scouts, it's rare. Famous Eagle Scouts include astronaut Neil Armstrong and President Gerald Ford. Despite the family's history of achieving Eagle Scout status, it was no given that Seth Peterson would reach that goal as well, his father said. I am so proud of him, he said. It takes a lot of hard work, but he set the goal. He had to learn, grow, and do things on his own, but he pushed through. He kept an eye on the target, and now he can relax a little and do whatever he wants. McLean County plans to cut tax rate and add jobs. Budget proposal restores raises for non-union workers. A year after cutting jobs and services to address a budget deficit, McLean County is on much surer fiscal footing for 2019, and that means good news for taxpayers and employees alike. Officials plan to slightly reduce the county's property tax rate while also adding 16 jobs and restoring raises for non-union employees under a budget proposal presented Tuesday to the county board. The proposal would be approved this fall. The county's fiscal year starts on January 1st. This year, we can at least say that we had an adopted state budget on time, and that gave us more capacity to analyze the impacts, County Administrator Bill Wasson said after his budget presentation. The 16 full-time equivalent positions to be added include 3 in court services for Veterans Court, 3 at the McLean County Nursing Home, 1.75 in behavioral health, and a new information technology IT security position to help protect the county's data and comply with state and federal mandates. We lost over 30 positions last year, so this is a little bit of right-sizing, attempting to identify what the positions are that we need today to provide the services today, said Wasson. We are depending a lot more on systems, a lot less on manual entry today, and that means we can reprioritize staffing to other services that are a priority for our citizens. After getting no raises for 2018, non-union employees will get a 2.25% increase for 2019, said Wasson. Emergency dispatch employees got a 0.5% raise effective May 27th, a $350 bonus, and a 1.75% annual increase in 2019 and 2020 under a new contract this spring. The county has not finalized upcoming contracts with corrections and highway employees. The county property tax rate is expected to drop from 0.91399 to 0.91398 per $100 assessed valuation, meaning the owner of a home valued at $165,000 would pay the county $502.69. The board has a long-standing policy that the tax rate should stay level or decline year over year. Despite those improvements, however, Wasson said some danger signs remain, including Illinois' budget problems, falling motor fuel tax revenue, and state reimbursement for probation officers. Wasson said county officials are concerned about the future of motor fuel tax money that the county relies on for road work as residents spend less on gas to fuel more efficient and electric vehicles. The county has lobbied the state legislature to allow it to add a local motor fuel tax on top of the state tax, as counties near Chicago and many municipalities, including Bloomington and Normal, already do. That's one answer to our ability to maintain infrastructure in the coming years, said Wasson. The highway department has done a great job finding ways to lengthen the life of our pavement. Wasson is also hopeful the state will restore funding for probation officers that's fallen by $400,000 over the last 2 years. It is not unusual on occasions over the last couple of decades for reimbursement percentages to be decreased for 1 or 2 years and then to be reinstated to the previous levels, he said. We're hoping this is a temporary impact, and in future state budgets, this will be addressed. Overall, spending is up from $94,708,205 in 2018 to $95,755,900 for 2019. Wasson also noted some upcoming capital project for the county, including remodeling at the soon-to-be-expanded Law and Justice Center, replacing elevators at the county's 200 West Front Street location, improving the nursing home, expanding the historic Route 66 trail, and replacing its final timber pile bridge in favor of concrete and steel. That seemed like a project that would never end, said Wasson, with a laugh. And here's today's Flick Fact. After tuition and fees, the average Illinois State University student spends how much money in the Bloomington-Normal area in an average year? And the answer? In a school year, the average ISU student spends $11,940 while here, according to a study on how college students benefit the towns they are in. With 20,784 ISU students, that breaks out to $248 million in 1 year. Daily Digest, Voting Rights Litigator to Speak. The League of Women Voters of McLean County will explore current obstacles to voting rights during a community program on October 16th at the Normal Public Library. Attorney Ruth Greenwood, Senior Legal Counsel for the Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan voting advocacy group, is the guest speaker. Greenwood has won two major voting rights cases before the Supreme Court and has been at the forefront of efforts to end gerrymandering and improve voting rights for minorities. Tales from a Voting Rights Litigator will be 7 to 8:30 p.m. in the community room. It is free and open to the public. Today in history. Today is Wednesday, September 19th, the 262nd day of 2018. Oh my, there are 103 days left in this year. Today's highlights. On September 19th, 1881, the 20th President of the United States, James A. Garfield, died 2.5 months after being shot by Charles Goutee. Chester Alan Arthur became the next president. On this date in 1777, the First Battle of Saratoga was fought during the Revolutionary War. Although British forces succeeded in driving out the American troops, the Americans prevailed in a second battle the following month. In 1796, President George Washington's farewell address was published. In it, America's first chief executive advised, "Observe good faith and justice toward all nations. Cultivate peace and harmony with all." A good message even today. In 1934, Bruno Hauptmann was arrested in New York and charged with the kidnap murder of 20-month-old Charles A. Lindbergh, Jr. In 1945, Nazi radio propagandist William Joyce, known as Lord Haha, was convicted of treason and sentenced to death by a British court. And another thought for today, he who is unable to live in society or has no need because he is sufficient for himself must be either a beast or a god. He is no part of a state. And this quote was from Aristotle, Greek philosopher who lived from 384 BC to 322 BC. Continuing with local news, Greentop needs $400,000. Bloomington Co-op must raise amount this fall to stay open. Sales have increased at Greentop Grocery, but officials said they must still raise $400,000 this fall or the doors to the Bloomington Co-op will close. The staff team has worked very hard to implement the turnaround plan throughout the store, and not only are we hearing great feedback from our owners and new customers, but we're seeing a big impact on sales, said Greentop Grocery Board President Michael Gorman in a statement released on Tuesday. But if we don't raise the money this fall, it means we will have to close our doors. But we look forward to the challenge, he said. The fundraising effort is part of the store's turnaround plan announced in the spring after what officials called a disappointing first year of business. Weekly sales have increased more than 30% since the implementation of the new plan in April, which included hiring grocery business consultant Tim Sullivan as an interim general manager to replace Mike Pennington, who stepped away from the position. Since then, Krista Kramer has been hired as the permanent general manager. The multifaceted plan also included improving store operations, price changes, and using different marketing techniques. The new campaign to raise $400,000 through owner loans runs through November 12th. Anyone can become an owner with a one-time purchase of a $200 share. The owner count is currently at 1,893, he said. Ownership is not required to shop at the store. On Monday, members of the board of directors met with owners and outlined the owner loan campaign, scheduled to launch next Tuesday. Owners can make a loan to the co-op, earning interest over the life of the loan while providing Greentop with sufficient operating capital to continue the growing sales trend, Gorman said. If we meet our campaign goal over the next 6 weeks, we have very strong 10-year projections showing long-term profitability. To open the store in May 2017, Greentop raised $1.3 million in loans from owners, and board member Melanie Shalito believes the $400,000 is achievable. We now have a physical store that is a vibrant, contributing business in our community, not just a vision, she said. It's become a hub for classes, events, and partnerships. The community has benefited as well, she said. Greentop has donated more than $20,000 to local nonprofits, is currently purchasing from 74 local farmers within 100 miles of the store, and provides double SNAP benefits to Link users. These are impacts we know our community cares about. We believe our owners will step up for the capital campaign to ensure Greentop can continue doing all these things and more for decades to come, she said. Lenders can choose their term and rate, but the option is only available to owners. But the store continues to look for new owners, Gorman said. HCC looks to attract more adult learners. Heartland Community College needs to do more to attract adult learners, President Keith Cornile told trustees during a board retreat on Tuesday. 80% of the college credit hours are generated by students under 25, Cornile reported. We need to change that picture, he said. The reason the change is needed became evident at the board's regular monthly meeting, where a decline in headcount and credit hours were cited in a fall enrollment report by Rick Pierce, Vice President for Learning and Student Success. Undergraduate, unduplicated headcount dropped slightly from 4,743 last fall to 4,714 this fall, or a 0.6%, but undergraduate credit hours fell 4.3%. Pierce said the high school population is projected to drop by a percentage in the low double digits by 2030 in the Midwest. We're going to have to either choose to embrace that and be content with lower enrollment numbers or reach out to other age groups. In discussions with faculty and staff since becoming president about 75 days ago, Cornile said individuals all expressed concerns about enrollment. The school's programs are slanted toward transfer courses for students heading to four-year colleges rather than workforce development, he said, and the college needs to find a balance. Cornile said that need not be done at the expense of the transfer program. He suggested looking into more workforce-related courses beyond 16-week certificate programs. Since becoming president in July, Cornile said he's been focusing internally, meeting with faculty, staff, and students, and looking at the results of the survey. Cornile said he has received generally positive comments, but also suggestions for improvements. He said there is a strong sense of pride and sense of family among faculty and staff, but also there is concern that some of that could be lost as long-term employees begin to retire. Students love this place, Cornile said, but they want to be more involved in decision-making process. To address that concern, Cornile said students have been added to some committees at the college. Also discussed during the retreat were the opinions of board members toward tax increment financing districts and tax abatements. Board member Janet Hood said, "I think they're useful, but we have to be diligent in our assessment of whether the loss of tax dollars is offset by economic development." Board member Becky Ropp said, "I think all tools are useful, and how they are used is the issue. She prefers when such agreements are tied to specific job numbers. I'm not against them at all, but I am cautious," she said. And board member Mary Campbell said the board should make sure it's not just going along to just go along. From the Illinois State Police, Indiana man fleeing police when struck was killed. A 27-year-old Indiana man was running away from police Monday night when he was hit by a vehicle on Interstate 55. The man, who was identified as Zachary Doyle of Hammond, was pronounced dead at 10:57 at OSF Healthcare in Bloomington. He died from multiple blunt force injuries resulting from being hit by an automobile. In an email, State Police Master Sergeant Ryan Cape said the Chenoa Police Department stopped a vehicle for an equipment violation around 9:30. Cape said the Chenoa officer asked Doyle to step out of the vehicle at some point during the traffic stop. He complied, but then ran south on the right shoulder of the interstate. A McLean County Sheriff's deputy who was on the scene assisting Chenoa police pursued Doyle on foot, but Doyle ran out into the southbound lane of Interstate 55, where he was struck by an oncoming vehicle, said police. Bloomington's five-day forecast today, times of clouds and sun, high of 89. Tonight, partly cloudy, windy, high of 72. Thursday, mostly sunny and breezy, high of 92, low of 71. Friday, not as warm, possible a.m. showers, high of 80, low of 52. Saturday, partly sunny and pleasant, with a high of 74 and a low of 51. And on Sunday, mostly sunny and pleasant, with a beautiful high of 77 and a low of 55. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for Wednesday, September 19th, 2018. Please stay tuned.